From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 165 with guest Robert Smith, recorded Tuesday, June 22nd, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you very much, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and Greg's out there somewhere, but not here today. So let's cut right to the story. I'm talking to a past guest, Robert Smith, who started with Microsoft back in July 1998. Oh, those were good times. Hired to provide technical assistance for Windows NT, and then he moved over to NT Workstation Server and is mostly server-oriented these days. Over the years, he's worked on storage performance, debugging, and other related Windows technologies. In a previous show, we talked about storage performance problems. And another premier field engineer, one of the smart guys that makes systems work no matter what, primarily in the public sector. Welcome back, Robert.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
So what are we talking about today, my friend?
Well, I wanted to bring up a topic that, you know, I've seen a little bit of coverage here and there, but it has to do with debugging. And, you know, we have, you know, unfortunately, we have blue screens in Windows or we have application errors. So I thought it would be good to see if we could enable maybe a little self-service or enable people, you know, IT people anywhere to be able to find out more about, you know, what happened or what's going on, you know, before I have to, you know, open an incident. Maybe I can do a triage on a problem
Sure.
before I have to open it.
And everybody deals with a blue screen now and again. Should we start there? What's the effective response once you have a machine that's blue screening?
Well, a blue screen means that, you know, the operating system has invoked code that halts right where it is. And so Windows will write the contents of memory to whatever sort of a dump file you have set up. Now, there's three different types of dump files. There's a mini dump, a kernel summary dump, and a complete. Complete dump is basically the contents of RAM. A kernel dump is somewhere in the middle. It's mostly just, it's all just kernel memory.
Right.
So it could be, you know, somewhat smaller. Even on 64-bit Windows, you know, even if you have 16 gigs of RAM, your kernel dump may be 2, 3, 4, 5 gigabytes. So it's going to be smaller.
I mean, normally memory is split into app space and kernel space. And so when you do a full dump, it's both spaces. And when it's just kernel, it's just the kernel space.
That's correct. So, you know, you go to look around in the debugger, you have a kernel dump. So you can see what's happening in kernel. But if you try to veer outside of that, then the debugger is not able to figure out, you know, because that memory is not present.
I mean, these days, do we really see blue screens caused by apps? Isn't it generally driver level stuff or failure of hardware?
Yes, applications rarely can directly trigger. Now, they can indirectly trigger a blue screen, but you're right. And the way that I say that an application can indirectly is something like where an application, let's see, like a hijack, like bad malware,
right,
can actually try to execute code by hijacking, you know, memory. So Windows can actually, now in user mode, if there's a problem like that, generally the application will be halted, not the entire OS. So,
right.
You know, it's really tough to find an application that can actually.
Yeah, it's really a failure if you manage to blue screen the machine through an app. I mean, one thing I've seen on workstations is I had a CAD product that would force a video card into a mode that would crash the driver, and that would blue screen the machine.
Right.
So technically it was an app that invoked it, but it was a bug in a video driver that took us out.
That's correct. Yeah, one thing kind of calls into another and that, you know, triggers. I'll give you an example of one that I was doing. I was using one time Process Explorer, which is one of the sysinternal tools.
Love it, yeah.
And, you know, you can pretty much do anything you want. You can kill anything you want. And I was in there killing threads. And I killed the wrong one, you know. Blue screen right away. And
you shot yourself.
Don't do that again.
Yeah. So, I mean, without a doubt, there are tools out there that will let you blue screen a machine. So given, and then we should just talk about, you talked about the mini dump as well. So what's a mini dump?
So a mini dump is, it's the smallest dump file that Windows can generate. And with 32-bit Windows, it's going to be 64K. With 64-bit Windows, it's going to be 128K.
Okay.
And a mini dump contains just a very small amount of information, like it'll have a loaded modules list, so you can see what drivers and DLLs and all that were loaded, and you can also see their timestamp. We will see information about the processor control. It's called a PCRB, and that's just simply, you know, what thread was running and a little bit about what was going on related to the processor. We will also see a little bit about the thread that was running and ultimately failed, and a little bit about the process that was running. And the thing about a mini dump is that we only have one thread.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you just get your appetite wet, you start to look at something, and you can't go outside of that because there's no other memory space available in that dump.
So what decides what dump is generated, or are they all generated?
That information is pre-configured in Windows.
Okay.
By default, like the client, like Vista or Windows 7, I think in XP, I think the default was to do only a mini dump. And because a mini dump is not useful most of the time, it's not completely useful. I mean, it's not, we can make use of it, but generally we want a kernel dump.
Right.
So we can at least look around. So we made that the default in Vista and later. And, now here's the thing about the mini dump is it's kind of useful because Windows will save every mini dump you ever had.
Interesting.
So you have kind of a history.
You have the chronology of all of your blue screens.
Yeah, and you can actually go back and load those at any time. And you can see, for example, if you have a multiprocessor system, you can see things like what processor was running at the time. And I've used that to help diagnose a bad CPU.
Interesting.
If we see the same, you know, or a similar, some kind of weird dump on the same processor every single time, then we might start looking a little bit more closely at that processor. But if it's just completely random, then you kind of have to, you know, kind of mark that off the list and go on.
Yeah, it's not, then you know at least it's not that. How do you switch from one dump type to another?
From one dump type to another, you go into system properties, and you can set up the configuration there. It's also possible to do from the command line using WMI, but generally you're going to go through the system properties, you know, little control panel applet or the,
right,
wherever you get to it. And so you can configure that and change it there. I believe it requires a reboot.
It's one of the advanced system settings.
Yes.
Right. So yeah, you just start up recovery. What kind of log do I want? You know, should I do a kernel dump or a small dump and so forth? And yeah, and then you need to reboot.
There's some considerations in that regard, because you have to have, first of all, you have to have enough page file space to contain whatever type of dump that you select.
Right.
So if you have a system with, let's say, 16 gigs of RAM, you have to have at least a 16, a little bit larger than 16, you know, like I always say 0.1 or 0.5 or, you know, a little bit something larger than you expect your dump file to be. With 64-bit, it's kind of tough because the kernel address space, as you know, with 64-bit can be very large.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't know how big that can be. Generally, it's going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 gigabytes. Although on real heavy servers, it can be a lot more.
Right.
The thing is, though, it can't be more than physical RAM. So just, you know, you can wait. Well, the worst case scenario is if I have 32 gigs, if I absolutely have to have my dump file, then I'll configure my page file to be a little bit larger than 32.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to have the free space again to
on
write
top of
the
that.
Dump as we're coming back up.
Right. That's cool. So, given I have a dump now, well, where does a dump go by default?
So by default, the memory dump will be written to the Windows folder. We can change that. We can, you know, especially in 2008, you can put it on a different drive if you want to.
Right.
Now the mini dumps have their own folder. It's under Windows folder / mini dump. So you can always go back there and look and find those.
And these are memory DMP files.
Yeah, actually, they'll say like mini, and I believe they'll have like a timestamp.
Right.
Like mini, you know, number dot DMP to kind of help you, you know, sort through, you know, what day or kind of chronology, like you were saying.
Sure. All right, let's get into the fun part, tooling for this. So what? Now I've got myself a dump file. Somehow I've gotten it off this grumpy machine. Now what?
So I'm all about tools anyway. Anytime I can find a tool to help do a job, I'm all about that.
Sure.
The debugging tools are free, you know, so you can go to your favorite search engine and just type in debugging tools. And if you want to limit the domain, you can put like site:microsoft.com. And so then, you know, you should, every time I go look for them, it's always the first link I see. It'll come up and it'll say, you know, debugging tools getting started. So you just go there and then you'll find a link on Microsoft.com. It's almost like a portal and it's geared for developers, but, you know, anybody can use the tools. So you can go there and find free download. You're going to find a version for x86, x64, and Itanium, if you're running Itanium. Now, so you can download from there. One thing I did want to mention is that starting fairly recently, Microsoft has been bundling tools in with the SDK. So not only the debugging tools for Windows, but the Windows Performance Toolkit, event tracing for Windows tools, those are now bundled into the SDK. So if you want the latest version, go find the SDK. Run setup, and you don't have to download because that's a huge, it's like several gigabytes. You can choose a custom install and just pick the tools that you want.
Cool. Yeah, and this is all on the Windows site. I'll include links on the RunAS site for anyone who wants to grab this. The SDK goes up to a gig, so be prepared.
So anyway, once you find your tools, now the thing about installing packages, you know, and I wanted to mention this because, you know, a lot of times that requires change control.
Mm-hmm.
I'm modifying my system. Well, you don't have to run the installer on your target. Like, let's say if you want to run the debugging tools on a particular server, you can install them anywhere. And then you just copy the folder and all the subfolders and files. Just do an X copy to get to another machine. You don't have to install them on
Okay. Every
single machine.
So once you've unpacked it once onto a machine, you can just pick up the folders and put them anywhere you want.
Exactly.
Or more relevantly, keep them on your USB key as a part of your toolkit.
That's exactly right. I do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I do.
So which tools are which? What do I use to look at a dump file?
So there is actually a little triage tool you can use called dumpchk, dumpchk.exe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been around for a long, long time. But it is slightly updated. You know, it's not like, you know, you're running some version from NT4 or something. The thing that's nice about that tool is you don't have to have anything set up. You don't have to have symbols. And we'll talk about symbols in a minute. But you don't have to do anything except point it to your dump file. And then it will, you know, output a lot of information about what's in that dump file. Now, what I always do is I will redirect that using like the greater than sign, redirect it to a text file, and then I can go back and look at that, or I can, you know, send it to other people or make a report out of that. You know, here's what happened. What's nice about that is we get a list of loaded modules. We'll see not only the stop error, even for application errors, it's great because, you know, application errors will pop up, you know, you don't know what's going to, or what triggered it, but you can go back and look using dump check. And the other thing that's neat is starting with Windows Vista and later, you can actually generate your own dump from, let's say you have an application that's hung, you know, not responding. You can just go to Task Manager, find the app, right-click, or actually the process, right-click, and you can generate your own dump file right there. And it's non-invasive. It won't crash the app.
Nice.
So then you can go back, use dump check, look and just do a quick, you know, sort of triage against that dump, you know, whatever it is, application or kernel dump, and get a lot of information without having to do anything special with the debugging tools.
And what kind of info are we going to get here?
You're going to get, you know, the whatever code or whatever the problem is. Like, let's say you had an application error, like IE Internet Explorer just crashed or something,
mm-hmm.
you might get an access violation. So you'll actually see that in the, you'll see like an exception code. If it's a user mode dump, you'll see it output from your output from dump check. Now, if you have a blue screen, your output might be, you know, like stop D1 or stop 1E or whatever the case may be. So you'll see a code and then you'll see some parameters for a kernel dump like that, a blue screen. Now, what's nice about that is you can take that code, copy and paste it into your search engine. And, you know, now we start searching and look for, you know, I'd start by limiting to Microsoft.com, but then you can always, you know, go outside of that and just search in general.
Yeah, I've generally found that those codes are imminently searchable, that you get blog posts as well as sometimes knowledge base articles on your particular crash.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, because what I try to do is I'll try to start with just the KV first.
Right.
And I'll try to find out, okay, is this something that's already been fixed? And so, you know, you can take like a stop D1 and you might put that into your search, and then also next to that put in and then put your OS version like server 2003 or server 2008. Search on those, you know, particular keywords and look at the results from the KV. You know, a lot of times, you know, you might find right off the bat a fix. So if it's a driver, for example, let's say it's usbstore.sys.
Right.
That driver may appear on the, we call it a stack, but it's a set of instructions that you'll see also from your output from dump check. And so you can see that driver, you can see the stop code, you put all that stuff into your search, and in a lot of cases, you know, you'll find something relevant. You know, now it may have been it might be an old article, but you know, you keep searching and you never know. Sometimes you'll find the fix right off the bat.
You hit an interesting point there. Rule number one, when you see a piece, find out how old it is. If it's older than your machine, you know, maybe you've got a problem. It's not going to be relevant. Like, just making sure you're dealing with facts that are relevant to your machine. I've often needed to put in hardware information about my machine to get that match. It's like, oh, on that motherboard, the original USB driver with USB keys over this size will cause this blue screen, that kind of thing.
That's a very good point. You know, check those drivers. You know, just because the driver's old, you know, you don't automatically make any, you know, you don't jump to conclusions, but, you know, just put that on your, make a note of it and go back and look. And, you know, a lot of times I've had, you know, at home, I'll have a problem and I'll go look and say, oh, look, there's a hot fix for it.
Right.
And so problem solved right away. I don't have to call or.
Well, that's the thing. The chances that you actually have an original error are low. Like, nobody's ever had this before. That seems unlikely.
And that's a pretty good point. And you know, you reminded me of something that I kind of wanted to mention real quick is this thing called Windows Error Reporting. And, you know, I think most people have probably seen that, you know.
Yeah.
You'll see a message pop up that says, you know, do you want to send this report to Microsoft? And some people, you know, or rightfully so, they're leery about sending anything to anyone. And then some people are on disconnected networks they can't send. But that information that's sent is basically a summary of a dump. You're going to have the stop code, parameters, module list, and thread. You know, again, we call it a call stack, but it's just a series of instructions, you know, the APIs that led that were leading up to the point in time where something bad happened. So that information is sent to a database, you know, and there's no unique information. Anyway, that's sent up to a database and we bucketize all that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try to find, okay, first of all, is there a known fix? If there is, you know, surprisingly enough, once in a while, error reporting will come back and say, here's a fix for your problem.
Yeah. You need a new driver, something like that. That's the usual one I get back when if that ever resolves to something useful, it's usually your vendor has produced new drivers to deal with this problem.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, it'll point right to the actual driver for your system, which is nice, or sometimes it'll point to the vendor's page, but in any case, you kind of have a direction to start off on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just save yourself some time to get right to sort of the core issue.
So that's all, you know, and that all ties back to the whole, you know, mini dump, kernel dump, type thing, is that's the same information that's sent back and forth and it's used to help solve a problem. Now, if you actually wanted to load a dump yourself, there's a couple tools available for that in the package. So there's a couple of command line tools. Those are pretty hardcore. You know, the guys in Redmond will use those, guys or girls will use those, but, there's a GUI version called the Windows Debugger, WinDBG, and that tool is fairly, you know, it looks like any other Windows app, and, you know, you have file menu, you know, file edit view and so on. And so from there, you can go in and open your dump. Now, before you do any kind of dump analysis, the first thing you're going to run across is you're going to run across these things called symbols. Symbols are files that contain information that was removed during compilation. So you're compiling, let's say, ntoskernel.exe. For a lot of reasons, you want that to be as small as possible. So symbols will remove are information that's pulled out that's not needed for that code to run.
Right.
But it is needed if you want to go back and, you know, for example, human readable. Things like, you know, what is this function name? And how do I find, you know, what's the address of that function or parameters or things like that? So you have to match up a symbol. These two things are separated at inception. So, you know, you have your symbol and then you have your exe. And if you want to debug, you have to mate them back again. So fortunately, Microsoft has a symbol server up on Microsoft.com and they publish many, many symbols. I can't say every product because I don't know about, you know, SharePoint and all that, but many, many products are just out there, and all you have to do is point your debugger to the public symbol server. And there's a couple ways to do it. You can go into WinDBG and hit File menu, and there's an option to set the symbol path. And so you don't have to remember it. You don't have to write it down. All you have to do is go back to that portal that I mentioned earlier, where you, you know, you type in debugging tools and you get the link. There's a link called symbols getting started. All you got to do is go there, and they have the actual command or the path. All you got to do is copy and paste it into the debugger, and you're good to go. You just need an internet connection.
And so what symbol sets have I typically needing to load? You know, where do you start as far as picking those symbols?
So for example, let's just say, you know, server 2008. Now, if you have a blue screen, the one symbol that you're going to need above all else is going to be NTOS kernel. Without that, you'll never be able to debug accurately.
Okay.
So, you'll just need basically the symbols for whatever modules that were running. So if you had, let's say, tcpip.sys, Windows NTOS kernel, and probably some related binaries like RDP and maybe, anything in the networking sector. So let's say it's a networking problem that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, you're always going to run across drivers that aren't Microsoft.
Right.
And if that's the case, we don't have symbols for that.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, it's not a problem generally, but the problem you'll see in the debugger is, instead of having like a name of a function like allocate memory or something like that, you'll just have a number. And so you'll know that we can't resolve that module. It's
right.
Okay, though, because generally we just, you know, we know, okay, that's third party. We work around it.
Yeah, it's not going to break anything. You just don't have as much information as you could have otherwise had.
Exactly. It's possible to go in and you can unassemble and you can look at the assembly code. But, I mean, now we're kind of veering off into, you know, hardcore land there.
Yeah, no kidding. This is just trying to find a trail of what failed beyond the blue screen that flashed up for a few seconds. It disappeared, and you probably didn't see that anyway because you weren't looking at that machine at the time.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So you load up your dump file into the debugger, and you get your symbols working. And, you know, now you have at the bottom of the debugger tool, you'll have this little command window that you can actually type in. That's how you interact with the tool. And so the first command that you want to memorize or write down or anything is called exclamation mark analyze And we call that bang, by the way, so you'll always hear that bang, analyze, space, minus sign, V like Victor. V means verbose.
Right.
So we say bang, analyze, dash V. So analyze is a, it's a whole algorithm that's been, it's been developed for years and years, and a lot of people have put hundreds of man hours into the logic behind that. And it will actually analyze the stop error or whatever, even user mode. It doesn't matter what kind of error you have. And it will make a, empirical analysis of what happened and present you, here's what we think happened. And it's so nice because, you know, you can have a mini dump, you can have any kind of dump, it doesn't matter. And you can just right off the bat have something that you can look at right away.
Yeah, I found myself an old dump file, fired up WinDBG and analyze-V, and it was a power state failure. It's right down to it, you know. It's remarkably smart that, yeah, this driver put you in a funny power state, and it hung the machine and restarted the IRP.
That's right, you know, and a lot of times, you know, you just have to remember that this is a best guess, or this is best based on, you know, empirical knowledge of previous, you know, problems. So, you have to kind of look at it and say, is this right, or is there more to it than that?
Right. Is it sensible?
You know, for example, a lot of times bang analyze will come back and it'll say your bad driver was NTOS kernel.
That's not good.
So that, I mean, that right there, you're saying, well, okay, that's not quite as helpful. I need a little bit more.
Yeah, I can't take NTOS kernel out. So, yeah.
On the other hand, maybe there's an update. You know, maybe I could update NTOS kernel.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times what we'll see in blue screens is we'll see memory corruption. So the reason that's pointing to NTOS kernel is because Windows tried to access some portion of memory that was corrupt or invalid.
Right.
And we were at a certain point where it was critical enough that we said we cannot continue from here. We risk corrupting more data after this. So we'll stop right here.
And that's fair. Something's got damage in the memory, and that's the point where it detected it. NTOS kernel ends up being the victim because that's where everybody's trying to get to anyway.
Right. So bang analyze is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that you can run just right off the bat that gives you a ton of information is exclamation or bang Victor Michael VM. Bang VM, and that is nomenclature for virtual memory. So bang VM will dump out, you know, a lot of statistics about, you know, non-page pool, page pool. You're going to see things in here that you're not able to see anywhere else because without the kernel symbol, we can't tell you things like, what is my max page pool limit? Or what is my max non-page pool limit? This means a lot for 32-bit Windows. 64-bit Windows has a much larger memory space, so we don't worry so much about it. But we're still running 32-bit Windows right now.
Mm-hmm.
Bang VM is pretty relevant because sometimes you'll see we're running low on page pool. Page pool is simply a memory block in protected mode or kernel mode.
Right.
And so sometimes we get into pressure. You might even see allocation failures. You'll see a message pop up when you run bang VM, not pop up, but you'll see it in the output. You know, so many allocation failures. And that'll tell you right there, wow, I'm running low on something. That could have contributed to my problem.
Right. Yeah, this is sort of the first point where you're going to really see the consequences of something running low on memory or a memory leak damaging the machine.
Yes, that's very true. And there's another one with 32-bit Windows, this thing called PTEs. PTE is a page table entry,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with the Windows Memory Manager and all the structures, you know, used to find all the virtual pages. And we've seen problems where Windows machines can get low on PTEs, and when that happens, if it gets low enough, we can get to a point of no return. And so you can look and kind of put that on your list. Look first, oh, here's my PTEs, you know, do I have enough or not? If I'm out of PTEs, okay, that's probably what happened, so I have to address that.
Yeah, the point being the PTs are a symptom, but it's when they reach zero that the machine probably blue screened.
It probably blue screened, or else maybe it hung, you know, or it just stopped responding.
Right.
Some servers have this feature called ASR, Automated Server Recovery. If the BIOS detects that the processor hasn't been busy for some amount of time, it will assume that it's frozen, and because it wants the server to be up, it will actually trigger a reboot.
Wow. That's at the BIOS level.
Yes.
So, yeah, full halt. You're definitely going to restart after that, but Dan, that's kind of a sledgehammer approach to, I don't care what you guys thought you were doing, you're starting over now.
That's exactly right. Now, I don't think we're going to see a dump from that.
No.
Because that'll happen before Windows has a chance to invoke the code. See, the thing that's interesting about a blue screen is the system is not gone. There's actually code running in the kernel.
Right.
That triggers the blue screen code that does all the different things that actually leads to writing the contents of memory to a file. So.
Yeah, it's a babysitting subset that's saying, okay, well, Windows was very unhappy here, but I can run in this little chunk here at least to get a record of what happened.
Yes. I'd rather have a picture of what happened than to, you know, risk further corruption. And so we'll stop there. Now, there's a couple of other commands that I just, you know, quickly mentioned now. Mm-hmm. Oh, rather than going through all the commands, I want to mention that the help file itself, just hit F1 in the Windows debugger, and you'll get the help file itself. That contains every command, and it has examples. Here's what the command does. If you don't remember what a command is, I go to that every single time I start the debugger. You know, oh, let's see, I can't remember this command. Oh, yeah, here it is. And here's all the different parameters I can plug into it. So, you know, you have one called, like, bang or exclamation mem usage, and that dumps out a really nice, now it's kind of long, but it will give you a nice output of, you know, all the drivers and everything that's using memory, so you can kind of look and see if there's something using too much memory.
And there's even a whole section on debugging techniques. This is not just your typical here is each command kind of help file. This looks like a much more sophisticated help file than most people see.
Yes, it is excellent. It is a great reference. There's examples, you know, getting started. One thing also I want to mention is in the debugging tools folder, there is a Word document, and it's also about getting started with debugging. So that's another reference you have right there for free. You can open that and kind of get some idea about where you can start with debugging.
All right. Any other key tools we should be looking at?
Dump check.
WinDBG.
One thing I did want to mention about tools is that the debugging tools have what's called a symbol server. So if you get into a situation where you're in a closed network, I can't connect to the internet, it's possible to bring your symbols. You know, you can scan them and do whatever you have to do to transfer them inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I can bring my tools and my symbols inside, and now I can debug on my own, or I can analyze on my own. I don't have to worry about an internet connection.
SimStore is the internal symbol server?
Yeah, there's that tool SimStore,
mm-hmm,
that helps you set up. You can set up your own symbol server if you want to. You don't have to. You can just simply xcopy your, you know, if you choose to download symbols to your machine when you debug, you can actually copy that folder over to, you know, internally. But if you want to set up your own symbol server, we include that right there in the package, and you can certainly do that. It's there's a bit of a learning curve. But it's once you get that set up, it's kind of nice to have that available. And it's not just for Microsoft symbols. It's for any developer can put their symbols into the symbol server, and now they have the same functionality.
Sure.
For free.
And this is not just for blue screens, right? Any kind of debugging can be done here for crashes of apps and so forth.
Crashes of apps, yeah. Any kind of debugging or just general, you know, development work of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
You can plug your symbols into that. Even your source code, you can plug source code into this. You have your whole environment.
And we're getting pretty close to being a developer at that point. I mean, there's an interesting line here about what work should the IT pro be doing and what work should the developer be doing.
And that's probably where I came into this and why I brought it, you know, up in this forum, is that I'm not a developer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have, you know, gone down that road years ago, but I chose to stick with, you know, consulting and service and support. So, you know, I try to look at it like, you know, what can I do short of, you know, learning C or C++? And so, you know, here I have a tool that's, you know, self-service. It's free. Once I get it set up, now I can just plug dumps into it and I can triage. You know, you can make this your first step, you know, for a help desk, for example. Hey, let's just run dump check, if nothing else, against the dump file.
Right.
And just do a quick search, you know, look for known issues. If not, then we'll do whatever else we have to do after that.
Robert, I think that's a good stopping point. This is obviously a huge topic. We could probably go on for days. Debugging is so complex, but thanks so much for giving us some insight.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.